Ladies, gentlemen, and everybody in between, welcome one and all to the latest episode of the Extra Canon Podcast. In lieu of Rob Worthington, our normal extravagant host, you've got me today. The dictionary, the celebrity, the pedophile, according to Alfie and the PPC, don't steal that. It's just because I've got a mustache. That's not a true thing. Welcome to the podcast, y'all. It's going to be a good one. We're going to chat about City for a little bit, chat about Long Lens. I don't fucking know how it's pronounced for a little bit.
Lons.
Well, spoiler alert, in lieu of Rob Worthington and with myself hosting, we are joined by the other two members of the Arsenal Canon Podcast Productions crew team squad. First of all, because he's already interrupted, I'm going to introduce Daniel Finton. He is, of course, the host of the Arsenal Canon Podcast. My fellow American, and as such, deserves no further introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. Danny, how's it going, boss?
It's going great. Thank you for introducing me over that commie bastard in the chat instead. America first, baby. Let's go. That's probably the first time in history any podcast host has referred to themselves as a pedophile.
In the first 10 seconds, too. It's not good, is it? I ran out of ideas.
I loved it, though, man. That was class. I'm great, man. It always feels good to not be in the hot seat and just get to talk a little more, actually, you know, instead of playing that Busquets role and just moving it along. I like to dribble.
No doubt.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah, I dribble when absolutely. I talk too, so it's great, you know.
It really seems ideal. Well, it's good to have you on. And speaking of people who are bound to talk probably too much during this show, the other member of this is Alfie Cairns Culshaw, the formerly balding Brighton boy, now currently lovely London local lad, and maybe somewhere else soon. Alf, how's it going, boss?
Pedo.
that is what he did when I joined the call 8 minutes later, as opposed to the three I promised. So I feel like I deserve it.
Yeah, you do. What are you saying, lads? Yeah, I'm decent. Delighted to be on the ECP, as always say. The big man coming onto the small sideshow. So should be a pleasure, honoured to have me on the show. Not pleasured, that doesn't make sense. What does in lieu mean? I've never heard that.
Really? You've never heard in lieu?
Never heard that.
Instead of.
Oh, well, nice.
I use it all the time.
Yeah, no, it doesn't mean you're physically inside of someone named Lou. It means like instead of, yeah.
Exactly. Thank you for the clarification, Daniel. That felt necessary. Well, it's good to have you off on. Nah, not much. It's just the intro. And frankly, I don't have much more to say. I'd like to hop into this thing, to crack on and to discuss an unfortunate, let's call it an unfortunate match against Lens. It got pronounced about 16 different ways on the US Paramount Plus broadcast because you can't really
16 ways to say a four-letter word.
There aren't, but it was about 10, and our commentators were really bad during the game, so they'd kind of just kept switching it up. But I'm going with Lens from Kate Abdo because I think she's awesome. I'm going to crack into this one. Let's start talking about the game. And you know what? I'll come to you first, Alfie, just because I introduced Daniel first. I want a little, like, call it like a bullet. Call it like a minute takeaway, your overall impression of what happened.
So I saw this game as, I'm going to use what I'm led to believe is an American term. I saw it as a trap game. I don't know if that is, but that's what I've heard from Arsenal.
As a what?
A trap game.
Yeah, that's an American term.
Yeah. So obviously we had the higher beating Bournemouth, and obviously the players are looking forward to the huge cup final with City, and then you've got Lens away in the Champions League. It feels like a bit of a trap game, if you know the American listeners will know what that is. And you could tell that it meant a lot to them. This was their cup final. It was the first time they've been in the Champions League for 20 years, their first home Champions League game for 20 years against a European giant. Obviously, we haven't had the success in Europe that we want, but we're still a European giant, a huge club to come there. And it was a cauldron atmosphere. They were very up for it. And basically, the way I'd describe the game is, I think we did really well in the first 15 to 20 minutes to sort of we didn't, you know, when you come to into a game like this, we kind of did it in the Newcastle game at St. James's Park. When you come into this cauldron atmosphere, first 15, 20, you want to kill that atmosphere as easily as you can. Just give nothing away. And we did that really well, you know, really solid. We just kept it quiet. And then as soon as we got one opportunity and broken play in transition, we snapped at it and we took the lead. And I think from that point, because what was because of a symptom of the fact that we chose a very strong lineup was the fact that the players that were on the pitch knew they'd be starting against City. So I think they felt they sort of had one eye on that game. They thought, okay, we'll probably get the second and then we can come off on like 60 minutes and we can play in second gear for the rest of this. And I think the players kind of thought that. And they sort of went through the motions in that period. And then one small-ish error for Raya, which was very brutally punished with an unbelievable finish. And all of a sudden, we completely lost control of the game. And we had to rebuild. And then our best player came off as well. And our whole right side looked dysfunctional with two players. And I think we'll probably get onto it. But I don't think Vieira and Trossard as two wingers really works. They're two interior players. They're not going to hold the touchline. They don't offer, you know, pace and behind, they're not going to take it to the byline. And I think that was probably a wrong substitution. I think it would have made sense if, let's say, you had Martinelli or Nelson on the left already. But with Trossard, I don't think it worked. And yeah, I looked at their stats and their data before the game, and I said it in the chat before the game. They're an unbelievable defensive team. They've got unbelievable defensive metrics. Even this season, when they've not got good results, their defensive metrics have still been unbelievable. And I think you could tell they looked really good defensively. And we didn't really... We ended the team with basically a Europa League team. And I think it probably would have been better if you'd gone the other way around. You could have had those fringe players really fired up to play in the Champions League. Max dog's barking. He's just gone to close the door. And he's back. Yeah, if you'd started some of those more squad players, maybe they would have been fired up for it. And then you could have done it the other way around, bought on some of the you know, starting Prem players later in the game. So I think he got it a little bit wrong, but I'm sure the big topic of conversation will be that and how you rotate and the Saka issue.
Yeah, I think, first of all, you know, that mentality of kind of bringing on maybe what we might call some Europa League players and then transitioning into some better players was a recipe that we used, I think, a little bit in the Europa League last year, and it didn't always serve us the best. Like, we at times found ourselves having to bring on our talent in games we necessarily might not have wanted to in order almost like save the tie, you know, to be the ones to kind of have that breakthrough. So I suppose from that perspective, it makes sense to pick a strong lineup. But I also completely agree with you about, you know, things being in second gear in some ways, overconfidence maybe leading to complacency. But also, we've said this in the past, it's never good to play with a team that is not the team you're playing against in mind as you play. That was a great sentence from Mac. And without further ado, we're going to shoot it over to Daniel. And Danny, I want you to talk, if that's okay, I want your thoughts specifically on kind of some of our deficiencies out wide. And I don't, you know, I'm not necessarily asking for solutions, but how did you see kind of the momentum change in the game after Saka went off?
Yeah, it's one of those things where we lost that key phrase that we've been saying all season. I feel like every single episode, we lost that unpredictability. And Lons, as Alfie was alluding to, are apparently a really strong team defensively. So when you lose that, you know, unpredictability and or unpredictableness, I think it would probably be then. It's
unpredictability.
Okay. English. Well, first and only language, folks. Yeah, that's when problems arise, because Lons, they set up really nicely back there. They just got a really nice deep block, and they had pacey attackers, and they were like, right then. We know from watching Premier League games, they no doubt studied us coming into this match, because yes, it was their cup final. That's absolutely true. The way you play against Arsenal is you sit back deep and you try to hit us on the counter, because you know that we're going to try to have the ball. And then also along with that, you should try to press us high as well, because since we try to play it out from the back, every team in world football that's ever tried to play it out from the back will make mistakes at some point. maybe not even in one given game, but at some point. And I thought they just did that to great effect, really. I don't think it was the best performance from us all around when, and I think obviously the wide areas definitely come into that. But I think just, again, it's more of the same for me. Wasn't really all that quick, wasn't all that decisive. I thought too much onus was put on Declan Rice to try to make something happen, and that's not the guy that I would like to see trying to make something happen, because for all of his brilliance, Rice, I don't think that's one of his specialties. Well, I know that's not one of his specialties. And yeah, it just didn't seem right. It seemed a little flat from Arsenal. And then Lonzo, on the other hand, just electrifying and just did every aspect of the game that they needed to do to beat us perfectly. I mean, their finishing was absolutely elite. For both goals, there was nothing Raya can do. Alfie touched on it there. And I'm sorry. I'm a big Ramsdale fan, but I think some of the stick David Raya's been getting has been fucking ridiculous, man.
I didn't get it. I thought he was good.
Obviously,
he plays that loose pass.
Sure. But, I mean, have we not seen Ramsdale done that 20 times?
You will inevitably lose the ball occasionally from one of those clips out to the fullback. It was like every touch from Lons winning the ball there was perfect. Like, most of the time, you're not going to see that absolutely exquisite 10 out of 10 perfect touches leading to a goal. Like, it was very harsh to be punished from that.
Also not what they're known for, by the way. Like, they are they're a defensive team. They play well in the wide areas, but like, you're not expecting like clip touches and chest passes and half side foot volleys into the top corner. Like, that's not their brand.
Well, if it's not, they did it to great effect against us, and they must have been training it.
Training
a lot on it, because yeah, I was thoroughly impressed with their potency in front of goal, but then above all else with their defense as well. What's his name? Mac, the dude that pocketed Jesus? Is it I forgot what his name is, but
Danso or Danso, however.
Danso, okay, I was gonna say
that. D-A-N-S-O.
I was scared to sound like an idiot.
No, he's a stud.
I thought he was fantastic, probably man of the match for me. Jesus, yeah, sure, he got the goal, whatever, took advantage of, funnily enough, Alon's error earlier on in the match. But then apart from that, completely pocketed one of the most complete center forwards.
I quite like Jesus' performance.
I thought he was fine.
Like, I think he was the best of our attacking players.
I was about to say, he was both the best of our attacking players and also the most frustrating. He lost possession 19 times in the match, by the way.
The thing is, he was so isolated at times.
Exactly.
And, like, I feel like he was working so hard. He was so, like, up for the battle. There were so many good duels that he often didn't win, but he was, like, absolutely battling for them. And then the players around him were awful. I thought Odegaard was really bad in this game. And I feel like Arteta kind of compartmentalised the defeat before it had finished, like, 20 minutes before, because he took Odegaard and Zinchenko off, like, our two forms of ball progression and getting the ball into the final third. Even though Odegaard was having a poor game, but he was like, I'm going to protect these players rather than keep them on, which is probably the better thing for the team right now, but I'm going to protect them for the weekend. Once Zinchenko went off, we just, our left side became more sort of anonymous and flat, and it was just giving it to Nelson in possible positions, and he ran the ball out of play a few times.
Yeah, so, and actually, it's kind of funny, the ultimate Mac jinx, I think. I said he can't really recall a Reese Nelson bad performance. I think this one was one of them. I don't think he really did anything.
I think
right.
He just came on to into the game in very difficult circumstances. Like,
that's true, but I think there's
no receiving the ball with no one anywhere near him, and he just was trying to run it out. And yeah.
We usually bring Reese on in moments where it's like, we're trying to fight back to get to get that go ahead goal or to wait, to fight for a draw or whatever it might be. But we bring him on in moments where we are dominating possession and tempo and where we have opponents under pressure. And I feel like he is really, really effective at applying that pressure. But he kind of, maybe showed some of his colors in the fact that he wasn't as prominent when it comes to maybe winning some of that back. Like, that maybe he's not a player you're going to bring on when you're trying to kind of regain control of a match, because I think he works best in hectic moments. Yeah, I wanted to, a couple more performances I wanted to talk about. I wanted to talk about Zinchenko, Alf, because you mentioned him. We've seen a few times now that Zinchenko's been having kind of bad moments and bad matches when, not say when it matters, but when we're under a lot of forward pressure, and especially those moments where he'll get kind of beat both inside and outside with balls through to right wingers. Lons found a lot of joy there, as did Spurs a few weeks ago. So I'll turn it to whomever, but specifically because you mentioned him, Alf, I'll head to you first. What do you think about his role in the team against, you know, in kind of upcoming matches? I think we were all crying out for advanced overlapping fullbacks to help our wide forwards out, and to have one constantly inverting doesn't necessarily help that. But it's also not a brand of football we've really used outside of Ben White sometimes. So, yeah, talk to me about Zinchenko and fullback tactics generally, I suppose.
Well, shout out. Sash, LT Arsenal.
You know, first of all, there are T's in both of those words. Shout out.
It's an accent, cultural difference.
Clearly. I know, I'm messing with you.
Shout out. LT Arsenal, but in a negative way. Not that I'm digging at Sash, but he does seem to really hate Zinchenko. And I think he's really caught up on some of these moments. And I do, you mentioned that you like Zinchenko in big moments defensively. I just think generally he's a bad defender in the big moments because he's against better players. But that's something we know, and I almost just don't care. Like, he's basically a midfielder, so it doesn't matter. And I also think you've got, for me anyway, you can forgive some of these lapses in concentration or one-on-one isolation moments where he's poor because of everything else he brings, because there isn't another player who could do that role in the same way. Like, you put Tomiyasu there, and as much as I think he can do some of the things, he's going to be more solid defensively. You saw, like, how dead we became when he came off, because we couldn't get the ball into the final third. We were doing that dish thing where it goes round to the sides and then back inside. We were doing that for the last 20 minutes or so because we didn't have Zinchenko playing these line breaking passes, popping up in these positions, you know, breaking the lines. And Danny has something to say, but yeah, go ahead, Danny.
I was just going to say, with Zinchenko, for me, Alf, it genuinely feels like, and I'm not just trying to nail you down as one type of fan and LT Arsenal Sash down as one type of fan, but to me, he sort of feels like the person who understands stats. Like, he's the dream player for someone like that, but for maybe somebody that likes to watch with the eye test, like, a bit of a nightmare.
I disagree. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, he looks good in the data, but I mean, he doesn't look good in the defensive data. He's just great on the ball. So I think the stats just sort of show you what the eye test show you. And I mean, what that one thing shows me, the eye test, when he came off, we were terrible. And part of that is because he came off the pitch and we couldn't get the ball into the final third. And I would say it's more of a sort of pragmatism versus sort of artistic outlook that I have on the game. he's obviously very pragmatic and is really concerned about those very occasional moments where he did give the ball away in a few areas, which is worth mentioning, but he still passed at like 94 or 95% or something. I just can forgive it because we're so much better when he's in the team. You put Tomiyasu in the team, and again, it's not a slight on Tomiyasu. There's just no one who can do that in Zinchenko inverted role as well. And if you bring Tomiyasu in to not do that, and we don't play with inverted fullback, it changes our whole system, and we have to altercate things. And I don't know. Zinchenko's just so underappreciated, and I don't think people realise it until when he doesn't play and we're just a significantly worse team in every aspect. And it's the same with Jesus, which I'll keep going on.
No, I agree with you about Jesus. And, you know, back to, I think, your point about him constantly engaging in duels and looking to scrap and actually jawing at the Lons fans at one point, and they started booing him when he was touching the ball. I think it's brilliant. You know, he's up for those occasions, and I'm certainly excited to see him against City. One more thing I want to note, if y'all don't mind me taking the mic here for a little bit, and this is on a point of appreciation, Alf, for a recent article that you put out, talking about Kai Havertz and, you know, are we misappreciating him? I'm not here to talk about Kai Havertz, contrary to most recent podcasts that I've been on. What I am here to talk about is something or someone that you referenced in your article, Alf, that being John McKenzie, who's one of the chief editors for The Athletic and for Tifo Football and pretty much my favorite person to listen talk about out of possession structures and also build up. And
nerdiest sentence, by the way.
No, isn't it just? But like something
my
that
person to talk about out of possession structures.
Listen, he's
isn't it crazy that there's one relatable person on this podcast?
But
like, I do love him.
I know he's brilliant, but one thing he's been talking about recently has been this switch that we've been making in our deep phases of build-up, where it's pretty clear that Arteta doesn't trust Declan Rice because he's not comfortable facing back to goal and then turning and distributing a la someone like Thomas Partey. And there's this interesting trend that I've been seeing where Rice has been flipping out wide almost to play in those, like, remember when Granit Xhaka used to play left back all the time? He's like playing in those spaces. Zinchenko's coming in, and then Odegaard is actually dropping deep to help with buildup. He did it a bunch against Lons again. And it's, you know, I like Zinchenko and Odegaard working together, but I do wonder if that kind of inclusion and that need to include Declan Rice especially is one that's hurting us in terms of our buildup. Because last season, one of our most kind of dynamic, you know, moves was to have Odegaard drift wide, Saka kind of come inside, Jesus almost drop into that half space, and our right side was almost unpressable because of the combinations there. And I think Fabio Vieira can fill into that well. This is the last question I'll ask, and I'll ask Daniel first, because we do have to move on to City at some point, given both limited time for us and limited Zencaster minutes. I don't know. I think part of our issue was that Lons were very much, you know, fired up by their atmosphere, by their fans, and they were pressing high and making our lives difficult. But I wonder if, do you see any changes or any personnel or, you know, any differences from a time when we would have taken the team that would press us aggressively and just slice right through them? And like, yes, Bukayo Saka is a big part of that because he's our favorite outlet ball. But even without him, I think it's feasible. I don't know. I'm wondering if you guys had any insights on maybe why we continued to succumb to the pressure despite having an arguably superior players.
Yeah, I almost wonder if it comes down to just something as simple as, well, some things I should say as simple as rust, knocking off the rust because it's so early days in the season, and two, speed of play. It's like we're trying to do two different things at once for me. We're trying to slow things down, make things a bit more boring. But I think when you play it out of the back slowly, it lends itself to problems. So the best Arsenal goals that you could think of that kind of went from back to front, you know, were just extremely quick one-touch passing that started with the goalkeeper. I feel like sometimes it just doesn't quite move at the speed that it should. And why that is, I'm not sure. It's either tactical or just physical, essentially, like the players just haven't quite grown into the new system yet. Because I can't imagine that Arteta wants the play to be building up as slowly as it is. Maybe he wants to slow things down, borify things a little bit, but I just don't think to the extent that it is at the moment. I almost feel like in this Lons game, lads, that, you know, despite the praise that I've given Raya for playing out of the back so well and so simply, God, I just almost feel like this was a game for Ramsdale, because it just really would have upped the ante, I think, maybe got the Lons fans and players a bit more emotional, and then we could have taken advantage of their excitement. And that didn't seem like it was at all present for me against Lons. And Raya is, I mean, it's the best compliment I think you could give to a lot of goalkeepers sometimes. He's just a boring goalkeeper. And I feel like maybe in this one, we needed a more dynamic one. And who knows, maybe that could have helped with us progressing the ball up the pitch from the back and helped us not, you know, suffer that one goal where it got nipped. Obviously, that's all hearsay. I mean, who knows what would have happened. But yeah, it's an interesting one. And obviously, now we're going up against literally the best team in world football. So it's something that we really want to try to figure out in training this week for sure. But yeah, I wanted to touch just quickly on that Raya Ramsdale thing. So I'm glad you asked me that so I could kind of talk about it. Because yeah, I felt like this was the game for me that Ramsdale should have played. Because if there is a true competition for the spot, I think Ramsdale would have played. Don't feel like there is, to be honest. I think there's a clear out and out number one, because this game seemed designed for Aaron Ramsdale, and he didn't play anyway.
Fair enough. Alf, anything to add? Anything else you want to talk about? Some final points before we head on to City?
Yes, I wanted to talk about the way that we've been sort of progressing the ball slowly, as Daniel was alluding to there. I do think it's difficult to play quickly when the other team structurally is so good and blocks the passing lanes, prevents you from finding those balls quickly, and then you're more ponderous in possession because you don't have those options. And I think Lons did that well. And we weren't really talking about that with the Bournemouth game, when we were just playing through the lines really easily because Bournemouth's press was terrible, and we were playing up the pitch quickly. But I also think we weren't helped with the fact that our two best progressive pass receivers statistically and just on the eye test, you know, they receive all our progressive passes, and Saka and Martinelli, who obviously there's some sort of talent in there, the fact that they're able to find the spaces to open up the passing options for the deeper players to find them so frequently. We missed both of them in this game. I don't think Vieira and Trossard were able to do the same. And a lot of the time we were just trying to go quickly to Jesus when we were trying to play quickly, and Jesus was sort of a battle against three massive centre backs by himself. I just wanted to, we sort of had a Havertz section in every podcast since we signed him, and I don't want to keep doing that, but I do want to just say one quick thing on him in this game. I think he does have a tendency for games to pass him by, and he's not involved a lot. Like, he doesn't put up high volumes of passes. I do think there were I saw one encouraging thing in that. I think we've spoken about, and I wrote in the article, all the duel winning and all that stuff. But one thing we haven't seen is any sort of conviction or confidence in anything offensively. And I saw three moments, which I pinpointed. And again, you shouldn't be looking at a £60 million player and going, oh, but these three moments where he actually did something offensively, where he didn't look really sort of scared or really conservative. But I did see three moments. And firstly, the run, really good run, where Zinchenko fouled him over the top and then he took the volley first time. It was quite unlucky, good effort. Second one was he actually played a through ball instead of just playing out to his winger. He played a through ball to Saka at one point in the first half. It was pretty nicely weighted, and quite an aggressive pass. And I feel like even a few days ago before that Bournemouth game where he had the fans singing his name and he scored the penalty, he may not have had the confidence to try a ball like that. And then he had the one where Jesus won it loosely in possession, then he drove forward and slipped Trossard in quite nicely, and I think it was a nice way of passing Trossard should have done. Again, you are squinting to see it, because we shouldn't be pointing out three moments where he did sort of all right offensive actions, but I feel like it was still a step forward from what we've seen.
Agreed. And, you know, as you said in your article, the price tag isn't necessarily his fault. That said, I think, you know, we're 29 minutes in. Let's flip this over to our fixture this weekend. We are up against Manchester City. As per usual, I have no clue if it's home or away. I think it's at home. But
it's at home. How yeah, do you never know this? It's always you.
I'm unbelievably consistent at not knowing if a match is home or away.
Normally it's just because we played away last week, you'd expect it to be home, but I guess you can have two away.
But it just doesn't alternate, does it? It really doesn't.
It generally does, but then early in the season, sometimes you have a couple home games away.
Yeah, that's fair. Anywho, we're away.
So I'm going.
We're home. Yeah, lovely. We're home at the Emirates, which is both a blessing and a concern. I'm going to kind of invent a little segment here. Let's call it things to look out for. And I'm just going to say, what is, starting with Daniel, what is one thing that you think we need to, you know, as whether it's Arteta or just as kind of watchers or as a team, look out for against City? What do you think is going to be one kind of pivotal aspect of this match?
I hate that I always pick the obvious thing, but I just can't help it because I know Alfie has such like, Alfie will pull some left field shit out. I have complete faith in him. So I'm going to go with the Bukayo Saka situation, obviously. I was one of the, I just pronounced a B really hard and obviously. Did you guys hear that? That was kind of weird.
I mean, not through my ears, but I don't know. Alf's nodding, so maybe he hears B's.
Obviously. Well, anyhow. Eddie Howe, Newcastle, they thrashed PSG.
Brilliant. Thanks.
It's a Saka situation. Look, I said in the group chat, pretty funny. I was like, I just hope we're not looking into this loans game, you know, 30 minutes in, whatever. I don't know if I said the minutes, to be fair. But I was like, I just hope we're not looking at it like, oh, that was a reckless decision to start Bukayo Saka. Alfie replied to the message, which was about 30 messages previous, and just said, LOL. I was like, yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's one of those things where, yeah, sure, it's everyone saying it now. Oh, the club no more, this, that, the other. Yeah, blah, 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 blah. That's true. But it's a dude that's pulled up on two games in a row, that's played every single match this season and has had a really long one last season. Feel like common sense has got to come into play a little bit there. And you just say, right, this is going to be a difficult game away to Lons. It would be nice to have the feather in our cap that is Bukayo Saka. But maybe, just maybe, put him on some ice ahead of our game against the best team in the world. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. So yeah, I think we look out for that situation because on one hand, he's a cyborg and plays every single match that ever is, was, or isn't. But on the other hand, this injury looks to be actually relatively serious. And a lot of the reports now are saying that it's looking very unlikely that he's going to play. But we've been through this before with Mikel Arteta. He's an absolute liar. I would be very worried if I were his wife, because he just does it with such effortlessness. I'm just saying, Miss Arteta, watch out. I just look out for the Saka situation because, man, it really, he is just such a great player that it just seems like one of those things where if he's in, I fancy our chances to win this game because they're going to be without De Bruyne. They're going to be without Rodri. I really do have some confidence going into this fixture. But if that starting lineup comes out and he's not in the starting 11 or even on the bench, my confidence is going to be diminished by 80%. So the Saka situation is what I'd look out for. Great bit, by the way. I like that going into the future.
Thanks, man. I made it up. It's kind of just a boring name, but it harkens back to the ACP days of old, you know, when we used to just talk about whatever. Mr. Cairns Culshaw, fire away. What are you looking out for?
Danny's just getting a call. He's taking it. Very unprofessional.
Why do you always feel the need to announce that, Jim?
I just get distracted by the little chat on the side in the Zencaster.
No, that's super fair. Continue.
Just on the Saka thing, I feel like
it was Mikel Arteta's wife, by the way.
Fuming. I feel like I've never seen such divisive discourse on the Arsenal timeline for ages, and not even Havertz has provoked this. In terms of the sort of, you're either really strongly on the side of rotate, you can't be playing any of your big players in any of these Champions League games, blah blah blah, or you're like the complete opposite. Like, I feel like everyone's in one of those camps. You're like, everyone's, you know, you've got, it's your Champions League game, you've got to play a full strength team. And I feel like I am quite often, I'm kind of in the middle, I'm kind of on the fence. I don't really know what to think. Like, obviously I like a little bit of rotation. I think I said in the Bournemouth pod, I said I would keep sort of maybe the spine similar, but with a few changes on the outside. I think I said that. But also, I don't know, like, the sports science behind it and all that stuff. So I don't really know. Like, they have better information than we do, so they probably know about it. I do think in this case, it does come across a bit reckless from Arteta, given Saka's been forced off in, like, two or three games prior. You know, just sit him down in this game. Give Nelson an outing. I think he's been so adamant on trying to make a point to Saka that the best players play every game, and I do generally believe that, but at some point you've got to sort of fold on that point and see the potential risk in forcing this player to play through these minutes when he's clearly not fit, and hopefully he doesn't go on the international break. But anyway, my thing to look out for is going to go with Jeremy Doku, because I feel like City's team last season was basically just absolute control, retain the ball at all costs, everyone retain the ball, and then let De Bruyne feed Haaland. That was basically everything. Everyone in their team had 90-plus pass accuracy except De Bruyne and Haaland, who had, like, in the 70s and 60s. Like, that it was just reflected in that. It was just keep the ball. And, you know, all their wingers just become so boring. Like, I hate all of them now. Like, Grealish, Bernardo Silva, even Foden when he goes out there. Just get the ball, you know, carry it forward a little bit and then retain it by playing it back inside. So dull. And they've added a bit of a diamond in the rough with Jeremy Doku. They've added a pacey direct winger who will dribble at you, which I think is something that we've struggled with, particularly Ben White, if he does play on their left-hand side. So I'm a little bit concerned about that. Yeah.
Oh, so, you meant Doku playing on the left.
Yeah, I meant
Doku. Yeah, super fair. He's been on the left for City in the last, like, three games, so it would make sense.
Yeah, so that would concern me a little bit. Because other than that, I feel like we have the ability to cope with them now. Like, I feel like the way they beat us, the way they thrashed us at the Etihad, we had more possession. They allowed us to have the ball, and then because they're so good structurally, they just eventually would give it away, and then it was just De Bruyne feeding Haaland endlessly. Like, that's how, like, three of their goals came from and all their chances. So I think we'll be more able to set up without that, because I don't think they have the De Bruyne replacement in there. You could say Foden, but he feels very, very hit or miss at the moment. He comes in against Newcastle, was unbelievable. Since then, he's not had a good game, really. So I think we can deal with him. I'm just a little bit worried about the Doku, particularly in transition against Ben White. Maybe we'll go Tomiyasu, although Tomiyasu playing midweek suggests he probably won't. And obviously you've got the scar of the Tomiyasu back pass last season. Because I was at that game as well, and it was so even. Like, maybe even we were edging it until that point. And then that was their first shot. And then Tomiyasu does that, and then the game swings. And yeah, that was almost a turning point in the season. So yeah, I'm relatively confident because they've lost, you know, they're without Rodri and De Bruyne, two key players. Apparently, Bernardo Silva and Stones are back in training, and they may feature. Which,
yeah,
is,
well, inevitable. Bernardo featured in the Champions League.
Did he?
So,
right, yeah, yep. Exactly. So, oh, did he score? I think he scored the third goal.
I have no clue if he scored. I haven't watched the highlights yet.
I know Alvarez.
But yeah,
scored. Yeah.
Of course, Alvarez scored. And first of all, two things: one, on that Champions League lineup, I have never seen so many tweets that are absolutely identical. As when City started a very strong lineup and everyone was like, well, but, you know, and this is my keyboard warrior face, but, like, you know, oh, like, everyone has to rotate in the Champions League because they've got their biggest game of the season coming up. And, you know, fucking, I've never seen Arsenal fans make fun of Arsenal fans so much as they have over this Bukayo Saka discourse. And yeah, I think Julian Alvarez was my threat. He has sneaky been their player of the season so far, scored a blinder of a free kick against Wolves to equalize. How Wolves have beaten City, I'll never know. But, I mean, I do know. They just defended really well, and Jose Sa made a number of very good saves, and they took all the sting out of the game, which we're never going to do at home at, you know, at the Emirates. But Julian Alvarez is kind of playing this odd second striker role. They're almost playing a front two with Erling Haaland, and he's been the player, frankly, who I'm expecting to drop into those De Bruyne spaces and make our lives hell in transition, kind of what they did last season against us at the Etihad. That's what I'm expecting from him today, on Sunday. So, yeah, I'm a little bit worried about him. I won't say that John Stones and Bernardo don't worry me, because they've both been players to punish us in the past. But yeah, definitely I'm a little skeeved out about the lack of Saka. And, you know, if we can somehow magic Martinelli back for this weekend, I think that's a very different prospect. But speaking of,
I don't think he's gonna start.
No, neither do I. But, you know, ideally or realistically, and let's just say sans Bukayo Saka. Back to you, Alfie. Classic little segment. Who's your starting 11? Who would you like to start this match against City?
So I would go Ramsdale. Right back's so difficult. It's difficult because, as I mentioned, if you want a shut down defender to negate.
Can I just, why would you go with Ramsdale? I
wasn't even paying attention to that answer. Sorry. I'm just so used to having Ramsdale. Like when I do my 11, I just go Ramsdale, White, Saliba, Gabriel, and Chamberlain.
You're so casually dropped the bombshell.
I completely forgot. Yeah, no, I would go Raya.
Because I would too,
Because, yeah, when someone goes starting 11, I just start with Ramsdale because that was, you know, the default last season. Anyway, yeah, Raya, sorry. Yeah, if you want a shot down defender to negate one of their biggest threats or the one player I'm really scared of actually bringing Haaland into the game, you would go Tomiyasu, but then you lose so much in terms of that overlap. I feel like it depends if Saka's fit. Like, if Saka's fit, I'd go with White, I think.
Yeah, but I'm saying sans Bukayo Saka, he's not in the lineup. He's not fit. Oh, okay. He might be on the bench. No Saka. Who do you go?
Okay, well, I'd go Tomiyasu. The pragmatist in me says Tomiyasu. And then obviously Saliba, Gabriel, Zinchenko. I think I'd try and mirror what we did. I think if Timber was fit, he'd be starting a left back because it works in the Community Shield and he can sort of do some of those Zinchenko things. Not quite in the same way, but he's better defensively, but he obviously he's not. So Zinchenko. I do think I'd do what we did in the Community Shield and go Partey with Rice left eight, and have sort of Rice coming back and forming a bit of a double pivot at times, out of possession. Then Odegaard obviously right eight, and then if Saka's not fit, and I don't think Martinelli will be, I think I'd go Jesus, Havertz, Trossard, but I'm a little bit reticent to have Trossard and Zinchenko on the left side because defensively that is.
So is that would that be Jesus on the right then?
Yeah, I think we don't really have a choice. I might be tempted by Jesus, Havertz, Nelson, just because I think what we did.
That's what I would have gone.
What we did in the Community Shield was just put our 11 best defenders on the pitch and it worked, and we don't really have that option necessarily, but yeah, maybe Jesus, Havertz, Nelson.
I like it a lot. We are running out of time, so Daniel, I'm not going to ask you to run me through it all the way. I'm just going to say, any changes?
I don't think so. I just agree with you that I'd have Nelson in there instead. I think he deserves a start. Wasn't the best performance against Lons, but I think he deserves it. Just one thing of one bit of parting words I'd like to say about this game. I think that this is so monumental. This is my hot take, that if we win it, we have the chance to win the Premier League. If we don't, I think psychologically that will fuck this emotional team up and we can't do
it. Yeah. Okay. Alf, any thoughts on that?
We've got to beat them at least once this season. Otherwise, agreed. We're giving them a 6-point head start, then we've got to make up so many points. So yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah, we've got a minute left, so
fair enough. Well,
at CodeK.
Exactly. There's your spotlight, Daniel. Shine me a spotlight.
I got a Fitness Frolic coming this week, folks. Dropping on Saturday, the day before the Man City match. It's going to be about one particular fan that you may be seeing in the crowd a lot lately, and I call him the key
jacket
to
guy.
I call him the key to winning against Man City.
Love that. Well, my spotlight is simply listen to this podcast. Listen to all our podcasts. We love it very much. As Robert Worthington would say, we're going to let it all hang as soon as we're out of this one. Thank you so much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.